You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. A little bit later on, Alex Smith, the quarterback of the Washington football team, will join us after that remarkable comeback. Can you win comeback player of the year after 5 weeks? I think so, unless Dak Prescott would somehow be able to come back, but I would rule that out. Talking to an orthopedic surgeon yesterday, he said that's at least 5 to 6 months, at least 5 to 6 months of somebody of that age who would have that kind of injury. He said, obviously, Dak is a special athlete, but I would probably have a window of 5 to 6 months. And that includes the rehab as well. Nick Wright from Fox Sports will join us coming up. He caught my attention yesterday that he says what the media doesn't want you to know about Michael Jordan. He had a tweet, very cryptic, so we'll talk to Nick Wright. And CC Sabathia will join us as well. He can talk about Walker Buehler's blister, and he can also talk about Walker Buehler's pants. Believe it or not, after the loss last night, the Dodgers losing to the Braves, this is the question asked to Walker Buehler, the Dodgers ace.
Hey, Walker. Walker Buehler's pants were trending on Twitter tonight.
Probably not like the time or place, Michael.
Thank you, Walker.
Even if he won the game, I don't know if it's appropriate. Now, maybe you could squeeze it in there. Like, let's say he had a great outing, went seven strong, and you go, hey, let's talk about your Lululemon pants that you're wearing out there. Not when you lose in dramatic fashion, where the Braves take you to the woodshed in the ninth inning there. And now the game of the season is later on today, Clayton Kershaw against Ian Anderson. Also, the Rays over the Astros, Bills Titans coming up tonight. And you got the Rays and the Astros again today. Saints beat the Chargers in overtime last night. But it feels like the big winner was Justin Herbert. That you're kind of going, look, you know, the Saints still looked a little bit flawed, but here it is, national TV with the rookie. He played well, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, but they ended up losing because they can do it better than anybody else. When you talk about losing a close game, Chargers come on down because they've lost 4 straight, each of them 1-score games. In each of those losses, they blew a lead. In 2 straight games, they've blown 17-point leads and lost. Over the last 4 games, they've been outscored 44-16 in the fourth quarter and overtime, and they lose last night. They never trailed until overtime. Had a missed PAT and a potential game-winning field goal in regulation, but the Chargers go down in flames. But the consolation prize is they've got a quarterback in Justin Herbert, and I think, including myself, he was going to take some time to develop, but he is ready to go. And going to a better team than Joe Burrow might have more success early than Joe Burrow and even Tua Tagovailoa. Let's bring in the aforementioned, very popular Nick Wright from First Things First on Fox Sports 1, and he joins us. Thanks for joining us. What did you mean by this cryptic tweet, what the media doesn't want you to know about Michael Jordan?
Well, listen, Dan, and thanks for having me on. It's an honor as always. You know, I blame you in part for this, by the way.
Oh, boy.
Listen, folks have a lot of nostalgia tied to the 90s. It's you and Keith on SportsCenter. It was a simpler time and the unbeatable Chicago Bulls. And I've always tried, like the great Michelle Obama, to go high when others go low. But I've had enough of folks bringing up 2011. And the Mavs series. I've had enough of people talking about finals losses. So I just want to remind people of some facts about Michael Jordan. Did you know Michael Jordan never even had a winning regular season, much less win a playoff series without Scottie Pippen with him? Did you know that Michael Jordan, the only time he ever beat Larry Bird in a playoff game was when Bird was coaching the Pacers? Did you know that in Jordan's entire run, there were 3 teams in the Eastern Conference that had an all-time player on them? Bird Celtics, Isaiah's Pistons, Shaq's Magic. Jordan's series record against those 3 teams, 2-6 against everybody else, 23-1. And did you know that after the Pistons' run was over, those next 7 years when Jordan won 5 titles, there was only 1 team in the entire East, because I was here, oh, LeBron walked over a weak East. There's only 1 team in the whole East that had more than 1 Hall of Famer on it. Jordan's team. He's the only guy with a Hall of Fame teammate. Reggie's got a Dutch guy who's 7'4". Patrick Ewing's got John Starks fresh out the grocery aisle, and people act like the East was great. It wasn't. And so I just listen. I don't want to have to do a smear campaign on Michael Jordan, who without question is at least the third best player ever. But I do what I have to do.
Who is the best player ever, Nick?
Come on, man. Dan, you know the answer to this. The thing is this. We know it's LeBron, and it is going to be in 25 years, folks aren't going to believe we argued about it. It's like, well, one guy was bigger, he was faster, he was stronger, he did it longer, he did it in a tougher league, he did it when the rules were kind of designed against him, he did it over a far longer period of time, he scored more points, he was obviously the better passer. What were we arguing about? Oh, the other, what was it? And so I don't think anyone can make a credible case that does not involve the phrase 6-0. Or bringing up now the 2011 finals is, and I will admit this, it is a meltdown. It is a giant blemish on the resume, but it's been a decade. And since then, he's played in the last game of the year every year, except for the year he tore his groin.
I'm with you on recognizing LeBron. I don't understand why he is, you know, he's
polarizing.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't know. Like, of all of the superstars in all of sports, nobody faces this like LeBron does. No, there's no other big name star that we try to discredit the way. Even, you know, Tom Brady. Like, people will acknowledge Tom is the greatest. They're not dragging him down at every, you know, possible stop sign here.
Well, and that's the thing is, listen, I think there is a credible case to be made. And that's why I said a little tongue-in-cheek that Jordan is at least the third best. I think there's three guys with a credible case. And you and I have talked about this. I don't know if it was on or off the air. Kareem gets totally disregarded. Kareem's got the most points, the most MVPs, won a finals MVP, 16 years separated, was the best player in the league the day he walked into basketball. For his rookie year, day one, he's the best player in the league. So Kareem's got a case. Obviously, Jordan's got a case. LeBron's got a case. What bothers me is not the folks that are like, you know, I think LeBron's second, even though I think they're wrong. It's your good friend, and not as good a friend as yours as he is to me, but my friend Charles Barkley was like, LeBron's not top five.
I know.
Yeah, you got Paul Pierce retroactively kicking him out of the top five because of a loss to the Blazers he didn't suffer. It's insane. That stuff is insane, and I do think, I don't know if he gets points for this or not, but we saw in The Last Dance that Michael, before his father was tragically murdered, was burnt out and thinking about leaving. Ahmad Rashad told us he had that before that he was thinking about leaving. And then at the end of the second three-peat, was burnt out again and left. LeBron has faced a level of scrutiny unlike any player ever just because of the social media and the 24-hour sports cycle we're in, and has showed up to work every single day. I don't think that can be discounted.
I think the reason why Barkley brings it up and Paul Pierce brings it up is how LeBron went about doing it. That he had to go to Miami. That he wanted to go to Los Angeles. He needed to bring Anthony Davis in. And I think that's where they look at it and say, you know, Paul Pierce benefited from KG and Ray Ray going there, or he never would have won. And Charles, knowing Charles, you know, he tried to do it in Houston. Like, they did try themselves.
That's the problem. And I adore Chuck, but he's quoted in the Houston Chronicle in the mid-90s explaining why he's forcing his way out of Phoenix because he wants a chance to win, to team up with Clyde and Dream.
Yeah.
And Paul, listen, Paul's a very, very good all-time player. I get it. Far better player than analyst. But that was unfair, but it's accurate. But the other thing is this. If you don't have Kevin McHale, gift his old buddy Danny Ainge,
that's true,
Kevin Garnett, then what's Paul Pierce? Like, he didn't have to go anywhere. He was the Dwayne Wade in that scenario with Ray Allen and KG coming there. But the idea that nobody did it on their own. And LeBron gave Cleveland a fair chance to build something that first time around. And they're like, hey, how does Booby Gibson and Big Z sound? He's like, okay.
I still maintain that might be. Now, you could make Iverson 76ers. You could throw them in there. Has Bill Simmons ever come up with a list of the worst teams to go to an NBA final?
Well, So listen, the thing that Iverson 76ers had was the defensive player of the year. Dikembe was excellent. Like, we forget, they just didn't have a lot of great offense. The 07 Cavs were a disaster, trumped maybe only by the 2018 Cavs. Post Kyrie, post the IT trade, Kevin Love's in and out of the lineup, and it's LeBron and my guy J.R. Smith and Jetty Osman. Like, all right, I guess we'll do this together.
I got a question for you. I can give you Michael Jordan at 25, LeBron at 25, Kareem at 25, and you're going to build, you're the general manager. You're going to build your team around one of those three.
Oh, I think to me it's unquestionable it has to be LeBron, because he has shown he is the only guy, and this is the other thing, you didn't tell me who the coach is, and LeBron's the only one it doesn't matter for. Think about That's all true. The dynasties, not even just basketball, Dan, football. All the Eric Spoelstra, who ended up being a great coach. You want to go?
He's going to be a Hall of Famer, though. Spoelstra, I think, will be a Hall of Famer.
Spoelstra is, absolutely. Okay. But at the time,
he right.
never won a playoff series.
Yep.
Hey, David Blatt, you're only going to spend a couple years in America. You want to spend one of them in the finals? Well, hey, Ty Lue, I think he's a really good coach. We didn't know it. Frank Vogel, they couldn't get rid of you fast enough in Orlando. You want to win a title? It'll be fun. Come on, come join me.
You know, when your head was shaved, you were more of a Michael Jordan guy. Now that you have longer hair, it just feels like now you became a LeBron fan.
I think 8% of the Jordan legacy is the iconic shaved head, and I think 14% of it is the sneakers. I really believe it. Like, I'm telling you this, I am literally wearing Jordan sweatpants, and I'm like, damn, he did get the marketing done.
Yeah. And I always wonder about this with LeBron. If LeBron had lost a series like Kawhi did, do you know we would still be talking about that?
Well,
like, he's getting critiqued for winning in the finals.
Of course. So I think there were two instances in these playoffs where you saw how hard it is to be LeBron. Jimmy Butler was LeBron for a night, and it was unbelievable in Game 5.
Yeah.
And you know what it did to him? It ruined him for Game 6 because he was spent. Kawhi Leonard, for the first time in his career, entered a playoff series where it's like, man, if we don't win this, they're going to crush me. For the first time in his career, for a playoff series, he had to be LeBron, where it's like, man, if we don't – it's a lose. There's no win for me here. We're supposed to win, and if we lose, I get killed. And by the end of it, he's going 0-for in a second half of a Game 7. Like that – that weight of the expectations that LeBron has dealt with every step of his career is pretty unprecedented.
And we're talking to Nick Wright, co-host of First Things First on Fox Sports 1. The thing that I bring up, and I'll leave you with this, is that we miss out sometimes because we don't like a player for some reason. I didn't like Bjorn Borg because he always beat John McEnroe at Wimbledon. And I didn't appreciate Bjorn Borg. And there are certain players you would watch when you're growing up and you just didn't like. I didn't like the Orioles. They always beat the Cincinnati Reds. Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson. And I caution people, you may not like LeBron for whatever reason, but appreciate this. You'll never see this again. Somebody who at 35 reinvents themselves and is still the best player in the game. And he does it on a big stage in the bubble. Degree of difficulty, crazy. And we're going to still somehow find fault with him. But you know.
And you know what? Where that really hit home with me, and it's a great point by you, is, and I don't mean to bring it down at the very end, but when Kobe passed, because I wasn't a Kobe guy.
Yeah.
So I was always nitpicking. You know what I mean? I was always like, well, what about this? What about that? And I love basketball, but I don't think I fully appreciated what he was doing when he was doing it, because I was picking nits, so I can be guilty of that myself. Then all of a sudden he's gone, and you revisit it, and you're like, oh my God, like, this guy, all the things he did. So I do think it's a great point by you. I wasn't much of a Borg guy either, though. Seems like a jerk. I'm just kidding. I wasn't a lie.
Good to talk to you. Keep stirring it up.
Hey, can I tell your audience one thing?
Yes.
About you?
Yeah. Oh.
Dan Patrick and I have never met in person, and Dan Patrick on three separate occasions has called me to check in on me, see how I'm doing, and to give me career advice. He is a really, really good man, despite some questionable sports takes at times. I want people to know that.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate you.
I'll call you later.
Okay, see you. Right.
That's Nick Wright. He's a co-host, First Things First, on Fox Sports 1. Now, there are certain members of the media. Evan Cohen, who does Mad Dog Radio, I think he's got a lot of talent. I think Nick's got a lot of talent as well. there's certain guys who just have fresh ideas and takes, and they're not afraid. Tony Reale, I just like that they do their research. And, you know, Nick doesn't, you know, cheat off somebody's paper. He always has some things that he brings, and I appreciate that. You know, another person I think is a star that nobody talks about is Shannon Sharpe. I think Shannon Sharpe is the star of that show with Skip Bayless. Like, if you listen to him, there's no shtick and gimmick. Like, he's got facts there. And these are athletes who normally come in and probably take a shortcut here. Hey, all I do is get in front of the camera and I talk, or get in front of a microphone. Shannon Sharpe has well thought out, you know, ideas and opinions, and very smart stuff, in my opinion. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll get to phone calls in about 15 minutes. Alex Smith of the Washington football team will join us. And what a journey, man. Not a journey man, but what a journey, man, getting to this point. And I guess can you give him comeback player of the year right now after 5 weeks? Because it'll be hard-pressed if you go, hey, what did you come back from? I came back from, you know, I had shoulder surgery. And like Cam Newton, you know, comeback player of the year. Alex Smith, well, I nearly died. I nearly lost my leg. And just the fact that I got on the field this past weekend. Yes, Tom.
He could have come on the field and just taken a knee or handed the ball off once and went right back out. And to me, that would be enough that he was suited up and actually was able to be out there for one NFL play.
Somebody in the Washington organization said they thought that they might do a ceremonial. This is prior to the start of the season. A ceremonial moment for Alex Smith where they let him on the field in uniform and then he goes out there and basically takes a knee, takes a snap. I mean, he's come a long way. Yeah, Paul.
I don't mean to be skeptical, but from an outside, I thought part of the reason Alex Smith was trying to come back was to fulfill some type of contract, you know, parameter where to get some of the money he made with his big signing bonus or his paycheck, he had to appear on a roster, be cleared to play. I don't know if that's true or not, but I thought that might have been some of it.
I don't know what happens with an injury. I don't know as far as collecting. But then, you know, the same source told me that he would be able to come back and they would negotiate a buyout. This was what was told to me by somebody in the Washington organization. And just the fact that it was going to be a ceremonial come out, take a knee, and everybody gives you a round of applause. But he'll join us about 20 minutes from now. We'll take a break. Phone call's coming up. We'll update our poll results right after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Oh, now I'm hearing from the Michael Jordan fans. You got to give equal time. You gave Nick Wright all that time to talk about LeBron. You know what, Jordan fans? You've had your equal time. You got a 10-part series. You got your time. Mark Stein, NBA insider, says the Rockets interviewed Ty Lue on Monday, also being pursued by the Clippers and New Orleans. Rockets assistant coach John Lucas expected to interview for the Houston vacancy, and Jeff Van Gundy is expected to interview as well. This courtesy of Mark Stein. We'll talk to Alex Smith, set to join us in a little bit, and just that thought of putting on that uniform and running out on the field this past weekend. And how much is, like, do you want to be the starting quarterback? Are you going to get a chance to be the starting quarterback? So I don't know how real it is, but he came in for Kyle Allen, who was banged up. So, like, it wasn't lost on me. If you would have said, hey, Alex Smith is going to replace somebody who got banged up on the football field, I'd go, no, not the Alex Smith we know. And then I saw him come on the field and they go, well, he's got to come in because Kyle Allen got banged up. Yeah, Todd.
And we're watching nervously every time he's about to get hit or he gets tackled. That what if he doesn't get up or his leg bends a certain way and something horrible happens to him? Imagine being actually him to be brave enough to go out there and be able to focus and concentrate knowing that one hit could do something devastating again to that leg.
Well, I don't even know if he's processing that, but his wife has to be, as she's in the stands watching that game. And, you know, she has no control over it. He's out there. He's playing. He's competing. She's just got to go, oh, my God, I got to hold my breath. She might be a better interview than him at this moment, everything she's gone through. Because, you know, when you go through, something. When you see one of your kids, or if it's your wife, they go through, your parents, they go through something, like, you're helpless. But, you know, when you go through it, you know, you just have like blinders on, tunnel vision. But those who are on the outside watching you, and they have no, they can't help you. They can't control anything. That's when it's, you know, you're basically helpless. Nick in South Carolina. Hey, Nick, what do you have for me today?
Hey, Dan. I kind of piggybacking off of what Nick Wright said. Obviously, you haven't contacted me directly for career advice, but my phone's always open. I listened to your interview with Jimmy Trina a couple weeks ago. And as somebody in the industry, I just really appreciated the general advice that you were giving on there. It was a really good interview, and it's just really nice to hear from somebody that's been in it for a while as somebody that hasn't been in it for quite so long.
All right. Well, thank you, Nick, and good luck. I always tell people, if this is what you want to do, be ready to hear the word no. Get rejected. And that starts out your career. Because people graduate from college, and I always tell them, you know, you graduate, you know, congratulations. That doesn't mean you get a job in this business. And there are students who are under that impression that they go through journalism or broadcasting or communications. They get out and then they're waiting for a job. If you don't start when you're in high school, internship, then you're well behind everybody else in the game. And it is who you know, volunteer, you don't have to get paid, whatever it takes to get in a building. To get in with any, you know, kind of TV station, if it's a podcast somebody's doing, if it's a radio show, anything. But look at everybody in here who started out with nothing. You know, guys in the back, you know, they're in the building and they get to do things now. And the roles that you find out, and they, once you're on the inside, that's when you find out about job openings. I mean, that's what happened to me. My first professional job is, I was running religious tapes on Saturday night to Sunday morning, 9 hours. And the only time I went on the air, I would say, you're listening to WTUE, Dayton's Best Rock and Roll. I don't think it sounded that good. You're listening to WTUE, Dayton's Best Rock and Roll. And that was all I was doing. I would occasionally fill in as a disc jockey. Opening, morning drive, news, and I was in the building. And I got to audition, and I got the job. If I'm not running religious tapes on Saturday night to Sunday morning for 9 hours, I'm not getting that opportunity there. Now, sometimes I'll run religious tapes on weekends. You know, just, you know, I kind of go in old school, a little throwback action there, just to, you know, kind of feel good. I remember the Power Hour or something like that. I remember all the, you know, I do is put it on a reel-to-reel, and I would... I'd have to cue it up, and then I'd fire it at the, you know, the top of the hour. And at the time, my other job was, I was mowing greens at Jack Nicklaus Golf Course outside of Cincinnati. And I graduated from college.
Free golf, though?
Yeah, but if you work at a golf course, the last thing you want to do is go back to the golf course to play. But I would just mow greens. I'd get in there, like, you know, 5:36 in the morning, go out, you'd mow the greens. I'd be done by 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then on weekends, I would run religious tapes. Whatever it takes. Even when I volunteered at the local TV station, I got paid $50 to go cover the Bengals and the Reds. And I was driving down from Dayton. So, you know, by the time I'm paying for gas and whatever, all I did is get sound interviews. But it allowed me in the building. Then I got to do the weekend. I filled in weekend anchor. But I was in the building. That's the advice that I would give you. But get ready to hear the word no, but don't accept the word no. Some phone calls here. I'll get off my soapbox. Phil in Indiana. Hey, Phil, good to have you back, buddy.
Dan, it's always my pleasure. And real quick, Dan, you're one of the classiest people I've ever watched or listened to. You're really a really great man. I wanted to just comment, Dan, the passing of Joe Morgan. I know you were a big Reds fan, so was I. I think you'd have to put him, Dan, I wanted to get your thoughts. You'd have to put him probably in the top 5 second basemen of all time. I mean, he was the catalyst on that big Red machine, which was, as you know, really impressive to watch. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Thank you, Phil. I would have to kind of look at the second baseman in history. Yeah, McLovin.
I would think that
That's not a debate. I think everybody, if you said off the top of your head, who's top five second baseman, Joe Morgan would be way up.
Yeah, I don't know who would be above him. I mean,
they're MVPs, right?
Yeah, back-to-back MVPs. But I don't know, you know, off the top of my head, when you talk about great second baseman, you know, Robbie Alomar comes to mind. I don't know who else is.
Ryan Sandberg.
Yeah, Rhino was he was great, but he never played in a big moment. Yeah, he had good stats.
Like, Manny Trio, don't forget him.
You know, Biggio, but he played catcher, second base, and center field. But I you know, I'm sure I'm leaving out five guys who should be mentioned here. Yeah, Paulie.
Rod Carew played a bunch of positions, right? Yeah. Did he mix it up a little bit? I know he played some second base.
Yes. I remember him just being I can't remember Rod Carew being in the field. I always remember him at the plate because it looked like he was falling asleep with the bat. Like a bat was just barely in his hands there. But he's one of the great hitters of all time. But I don't know what other second baseman come to mind there. Jackie Robinson, certainly. Yeah, Joe would have had better stats than Jackie Robinson, but of course Jackie's place in history. But yeah, I'm sure that Joe, if I ever said that to him, I'd be like, "Hey, I'm gonna put you over Jackie Robinson." He'd probably say, "Nope, you're not doing that." Yes, Fritzy.
Just I was doing a little search. Lou Whitaker.
Sweet Lou was good, but he's not in the Hall of Fame, is he? Or did he get in? I don't know if he and Trammell. I mean, that was a great double play combination.
And they had like Frank White and Davey Lopes, Bobby Gritch there.
Yeah, but they're not in that. They're not in that conversation. Not with Morgan. Yeah, McLovin.
I don't think he played that much, but remember when Yount was at shortstop and Molitor was at second for the Brewers?
Yeah,
that was
great double play combination as well. Then Yount went to center field. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll connect, hopefully, with Alex Smith, the Washington football team quarterback, coming up next. More phone calls as well. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Talk to the former Yankee great CC Sabathia. He'll join us coming up next hour as we dissect some of the playoff action from yesterday and last night. You got Braves Dodgers. This might be, it's not the biggest start of Clayton Kershaw's career, but it's up there because the Dodgers losing to the Braves last night. The Rays and Astros go at it again. Bills and Titans in a special Tuesday night game. He's the quarterback for the Washington football team. He's Alex Smith, kind enough to join us. Alex, I'll get to you in a moment. How's your wife doing?
She's doing good. I think she obviously put her through some stress on Sunday, but she was pumped. She was just as excited as me, I think, especially going out there and doing it and getting through it and, you know, get that first hit out of the way. But yeah, I think she definitely was feeling it on Sunday.
Because I'm watching and, you know, she can't do anything about it. Your kids are there, you know, and they probably say, "Dad's out on the field." Mom is probably going, "Oh my God, we've been through so much." She's holding her head like she doesn't know how to react there. Have you seen the video of
I saw the good clip, and I think it kind of sums it up. I felt like my wife certainly there, and you know, feeling it. You could see the stress on her face, and you know, obviously concern. And my daughter's oblivious. My 4-year-old daughter's dancing next to her, playing in the stadium. You know, my boys were a little more in tune, but they still, you know, I don't think kind of a great idea, and just kind of taking it in. The dad's back out there. But yeah, it was funny to see that. I was really happy they got to be there. You know, we hadn't had fans the first couple home games, so I was pumped that the families got to come out, and certainly they got to be there with me because my wife has been through so much the last couple of years with me, and so cool for her to be there and to share it with me.
I also wonder if it helped that you didn't have a week to prepare for this moment. Like, it was just, "Hey, Alex, go out on the field."
Yeah, in a lot of ways, you're right. Like, rip the Band-Aid off. It was like, as soon as the hit happened on Kyle, I knew it was a good one. And I went over and grabbed my helmet. I was like, "Let's go. It's time to go, you know, warm up a little bit, get a few throws in, get a couple snaps, and, like, no time to think." In that sense, yeah, it was kind of nice. Just let's go. No buildup, straight to it. So, yeah, in a lot of ways, thankful for that. You know, for me, it's also – it's been hard with no offseason, no preseason, you know, take away the injury. For me, it's obviously being out of football for 2 years as well. And so for me, taking advantage of the reps, getting back in, what it's like. So it was nice to get thrust out there, especially into a 2-minute drill where it's kind of just go play and react. And for me, a lot of that, I think those instincts, knowing that all there, just kind of, I felt like hadn't left. So it was nice to get back in there and get in the mix.
But I know this may sound strange. What felt more like football, the pass that you complete or Aaron Donald trying to take your head off?
Like, I always, as a quarterback, and this has been my entire career, you know, like coaches, I think, talk to you about, you know, as far as getting into a rhythm. And for me, it's kind of one or the other. Get a good completion or get hit, you know. And I think both as a QB kind of help you get into the game, into the flow of things. So nice for me to kind of knock both those out pretty early.
Did Aaron Donald say anything to you, like when he's trying to tackle you? I mean, everybody knows what you've been through.
I mean, obviously the one time when I didn't know it was him that jumped on my back. I mean, I knew it at some point. I felt like it was in slow motion. And when I did, I felt like I had a body on my back, you know, and I'm standing there, and certainly, you know, to know that I'm good to go with that, and obviously feeling strong out there. So that was nice. Aaron's obviously a heck of a player, but, you know, obviously a really good person as well. I've been around him a little bit in the offseason, so a ton of respect for him and love that obviously he brings it. And so it was nice out there to certainly get thrown into the fire a little bit.
Are you competing for the starting job?
You know, for me, yeah. I mean, I go out there and compete every single day. That's the deal. You know, camp was a little different. You know, I started on PUP and you know, obviously a little bit had to go prove it that I can do this. And so kind of starting behind the eight ball, we got a couple of young quarterbacks that obviously, you know, getting the majority of the reps. So for me, trying to take advantage of my reps, take advantage of my opportunities out there and make the most of them. And yeah, certainly this week to kind of to get bumped up to the two and know that I was one play away, and I knew the reality of that as much as anybody. So for me, being ready, I mean, my number's called, I'm ready to roll, and this league's about making the most of your opportunities, and so for me, excited about whenever this next one comes.
He's Alex Smith. He is the quarterback for the Washington football team. Last time you were on the show, you got traded to Washington 2 hours later.
Yep.
Did you know, when you were in Minnesota that day, you were going to be traded when you went on the show?
Am I under oath?
Yes, you are.
you know, there, that was kind of, honestly, it was ironic that, you know, that day, kind of doing some of the media there around Super Bowl that day, that was kind of the day when a lot of that was actually going on. So in and out, a lot of that, I was kind of getting updated in between on my phone and with conversations. So that was the day it was happening. So yeah, certainly I knew things were in the mix. A little weird to be doing, obviously, media in the middle of all that.
Have you watched the documentary on your comeback, your surgeries?
I did. Yeah. I watched it this offseason when it aired. It was, you know, it's not only, you know, a little bit scary, obviously, to put all that out there, to let the cameras in and try to be real. That was my goal from the get-go when I decided to do it. It was just, I wanted to be honest and real and not hide anything. And so, yeah, you never know how that's sometimes going to come out. So, yeah, just like everybody else, wanted to see, yeah, want to see it.
I couldn't get through it. Couldn't do it. No, I've had six surgeries on my knee, but nothing compared to that. And I tried, and at some point I went, you could lose your leg, and you're allowing a documentary, and I don't know how close you could have died, but I know that you were close to maybe losing a portion of your leg. At any point, do you say to your wife, or does your wife say, no, this is like, let's get the cameras out of here?
Yeah, man, I think the thankful thing, yeah, I mean, certainly when I had sepsis and things were, and my life was kind of in danger, at that point, honestly, it was just, you know, doctors just trying to save my life. And then from there, save my leg. And I think once I had elected to go with limb salvage and obviously the numerous surgeries that was going to take, and the unknown, that's when the documentary became, you know, a reality once we headed down that road. And so for me, it was a lot of thought, but certainly the uniqueness of the situation. For me, also the uniqueness that a lot of all the technology, even the surgeries, the limb salvage surgery that I had, a lot of that was all perfected because of the servicemen and women, especially these last, you know, 20, 25 years in the Middle East. And there had been so many limb injuries you know, from the wars in the Middle East. And so for me to kind of benefit from the technology that our servicemen and women, you know, had gone through, I think was part of it for me that it really kind of made it worthwhile. I was the first, obviously, I think, athlete to kind of go through this. This was a kind of uncharted territory as far as the road back. And there were no guarantees that I was even going to get beyond maybe even just trying to walk. And obviously that was scary. I'm thankful to be obviously where I am today and for so many things. So yeah, that was kind of the thought process for me that I wanted it. I was benefiting from so many people before me and I felt like I owed it to anybody coming after me to kind of, document it and help progress.
Can you win comeback player of the year after 5 weeks, Alex?
I don't care. Honestly, you know, for me, the feeling, being out there, the emotions, the being on that edge, that's why I came back and certainly in the middle of it right now and just taking it day by day. So
I wondered about this, and it's not fair to put you in the position, but you know, when Dak goes down with that kind of injury and this is a fraternity with quarterbacks, do you reach out?
Yeah. Guys, great thing you asked. You know, for me, especially with Dak, I feel like we have a ton in common because he played for you know, my same coaches all through college, you know, a bunch of, you know, Dan Mullen coached him in college. My good friend Brian Johnson was his quarterback coach all through college. So Dak's a guy I keep up with a lot, certainly in the division as well. So I have a ton of respect for. I love his game. I love him as a human being, everything he's about. So I had just gotten home from the game. You know, celebrating, you know, obviously, with, you know, taking it all in with my wife and kids. And we had the Cowboy game on, so watched it happen live. And you know, I feel like I've become a little bit of an expert, you know, the lower leg. And so, yeah, I knew, looked like his ankle immediately. And, you know, for me, yeah, thinking about him a lot. I thought a lot about, I've checked up on him through our mutual friends and seeing how he's doing. I thought a lot about shooting him a text. Part of me also didn't want to scare the hell out of him by shooting him a text. and then thinking that, dude, he might be headed down this road. So I feel like I kind of want to let the infection risk kind of get out of the way and hopefully reach out here soon.
Well, I don't know what the next chapter is, but you gave us a hell of a one this past weekend. And, you know, like I said, I've been through so many surgeries and you're going out there to play football and that's completely different. So my admiration for you as a man, I mean, that's impressive stuff. And certainly your wife to be able to be there because I know how important that is. Have that support because without that, you know, maybe you're not here. You're not in this moment right now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alex. That's Alex Smith, the quarterback for the Washington football team. Yeah, I couldn't get through the documentary. It was, you know. Plus, he's in the moment. It's different. But if I'm his wife, then I'm saying, get these cameras out of here. Like, I got to worry my husband's going to live. And then I'm worried if he's going to be able to walk. And then he's saying, you know, what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan? All those men and women, you know, who would lose a leg. And he said he benefited from that. So powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. And he's 36. Like Reggie Bush was his high school teammate. You know, Reggie Bush hadn't played football in a few years. And here he is out of football for 2 years, trying to come back and play. And then getting into a game. And then saying, I want to compete for the starting job. Yeah, McLeod.
Was that a good thing that he didn't know it was Aaron Donald on his back? Would that have freaked him out if he had known who it was?
Well, I don't know if they gave you a stress test in the hospital where they go, we're going to put 330 pounds on you as if it's Aaron Donald. You know, maybe that's a whole new rehab. Hey, let's see. We're going to put Ndamukong Suh on your back right now. Just the amount of weight. Yeah, Paulie.
That's what I was thinking. When it was like the worst first hit you could have if you're Alex Smith. It wasn't like a grazing shot to the shoulder or some guy like grabs him and pulls him down. He has the thickest defensive lineman in the league. He really jumped on his back like a piggyback.
I know.
And Aaron Donald's not thinking about what the past of the quarterback when he's doing it. He's just doing his job. But I was like, oh, that's the worst thing.
And plus, he didn't mean to be funny, but he said, you know, I don't want to reach out to Dak as if to alarm him. Like, hey, you know, you're in the same boat as I was. Yes, Don.
And you want to be a supportive wife, but after everything they went through, you would think some wives might be, you know, this is it. We are done with football. Let's thank God you're alive and you didn't lose your leg. And, you know, I don't know how she could stand by him to that extent, how to be that brave and be fine with him going back out there again.
Yeah, because it's more on her than it is on him, because she has to just watch. And, you know, having been there when you watch somebody you love have surgery, even going through childbirth, like you can't do anything about it. You're there, but you can't do anything about it. And here she is in the stands. She's holding her head like, oh, my God. And his kids are reacting like, yay, dad's in the game. And then mom is just going. And she was quoted as saying she was nauseous. Like she was feeling sick while watching him. Yeah, Paul.
You do remember the last time he was in studio was the Minnesota Super Bowl week, and we did not know he was going to be traded to the Redskins hours later. And we were throwing the football around, and I think McLovin said to him, "Yeah, give me a fastball. It's not like it's Mahomes. I shouldn't have any problem with it." I think that's what you said to Alex Smith last time we saw.
Yeah. But if for some reason, he didn't seem bugged that day, Dan. It was weird. It's almost as if he knew something.
Yeah. And now we find out when he said, am I under oath? And I realized that he did know. Jeff in Detroit joins us. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind today?
What up, though? One time for chat. Bro, I'm calling this morning, Dan, because I owe you an apology. I needed to do a little research. I did not know that the Cowboys offered Dak Prescott $33 million with $100 million guaranteed. And excuse me, but I really don't know any broke Cowboy quarterbacks. I mean, it's like you get the penthouse, you get the limousine, you get all of the perks. All you have to do is do something decent with the Dallas Cowboys. You'll be the man forever. So on Dak's end, that was his fault. And I like to just say big ups to Mark Cuban going out finding Delonte West. My cousin sent me a picture. He was panhandling on the side of the road, having mental problems, drug issues. Mark Cuban went out himself, found Delonte, and got him into a treatment program. I don't know too many billionaires that would do that. So big up to Mark. He got a big heart.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, Delonte West, former NBA player, got him into rehab. Yeah, the whole Dak situation, you know, best case scenario is probably going to be they franchise him. But do you want to see what that progress is like? You're not going to be able to see him in a game. You're not going to offer him $100 million out of sympathy. Final hour coming up, CC Sabathia, the former Yankee great, will join us. Dan Patrick Show.